Welcome to the Never Settle podcast. My name is Mel Clark, and I am passionate about helping people realise that settling for second best is no longer an option, and that everyone deserves to live the life they truly desire. Today I got to chat with the wonderful Allura Lovelight. Allura is an R&B singer. She's had her song listened to millions of times on TikTok and radio and all around the world. But she's way more than that. She's got such heart and soul. She's passionate about helping teens and young people make it by themselves in the music industry, give them confidence, empower them. I really don't know when this girl sleeps, but I really enjoyed this conversation. She's so down to earth, and even though she's got, you know, she's got some fame and she's growing her artistry, you can really sense the authenticness of Allura, and that translates into her music as well. So I want to wish Allura all the best with her career and also with her coaching and mentoring. And guys, you're going to really enjoy this conversation. Allura's a real sweetheart. Well, hello, lovely listeners. Today, I have the honour of speaking to Allura Lovelight. Allura, I don't think there's anything she hasn't done. She's just like on everything. So she's an American R&B recording artist and performer. She's based out of New York, and she's in New York at the moment. She's performed all over the US for over 100,000 people. That may have gone up since you wrote this. And you've worked alongside Grammy Award-winning producers and number one Billboard artists. And you talk about your single, Erotici. Is that still a recent single, or?
Yes, yeah. It's still less than a year old, so definitely still recent, yeah.
Cool. So, and that's been played on over 25 stations internationally in the UK and Canada. You're also trained classically on the piano, amazing. And but you also, you're more than just a performer and a writer. You want to empower teenage girls in terms of writing, self-confidence, self-belief, all of those things. And you founded something called the You Matter Movement back in 2018, mm-hmm. To empower and inspire the youth. And you've worked with a lot of young kids through after-school music empowerment programs, teen empowerment workshops, music lessons for songwriting. And when do you get to sleep, Allura?
Not much. I travel, that's about it.
Yeah. You're also a two-time published writer with Addicted to Success, which is the number one motivational and inspirational website with over 315 million visitors. Along with publications on Newsbreak, Thrive Global, and Music Matters blog. Wow. And I know there's stuff that I haven't covered off. Oh, yeah. So you're also the CEO of Love Light Sound Music. Just bear with me. And creator of Unseen to Young Queen, which is a teen girls course to teach teens how singing, songwriting, and performance influences their confidence, their self-love, and basic life skills. So amazing. It's amazing to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So, I love just to have a really casual conversation, but I love, and the listeners love to know how you got to where you've got to. You know, what was your growing up like? What were your influences? The fact that you classically trained 25 years plus on the piano. I've got a guitar. I've got a Gibson because I'm a singer as well. And I've sort of, you know, taught myself a little bit over the years, but nothing, I'm sure, to the level that you've got. So, yeah, I'd love to just hear more about your backstory, really, and how you've got to where you've got to.
Yeah. So I've always done music. It's really always been my gift, my passion, my calling. And I was just crazy enough to be like pursuing it. I think a lot of people are gifted musically. I think the pursuing of it as your career is just a whole different animal. It really doesn't have much to do with if you're talented enough or not. There's a lot of people who are talented enough to do this, but there's a lot of other things that come with it. And not, to be honest, like everybody who's super talented with music it's not their personality, or it's not meant for them to do certain things with the business, because it is a business. So yeah, I grew up playing the piano. I started playing the piano when I was very, very little. I would like go in the piano room, my mom, and she would like, wait, I'll teach you, but like not yet. And I would start, she caught me starting to teach myself. And so she said, okay, I'll teach you. And so she's the one who's taught me piano. And then my dad has been a business professor and into business and entrepreneurship his whole life. So it just kind of went hand in hand. I was always very interested in business, but I was also, you know, loved music with everything that I had. So I grew up playing piano. When I was like in middle school, I started to be like, I want to play everything. So I played the saxophone a little bit. I played the violin for a little while. I played the guitar for a little while. Learned about songwriting. All of that was very intriguing to me. I loved like the idea of making something out of nothing, you know, and music just always touched my soul. And then my mom was like, what do you want to do in college? And I was like, definitely not music. I don't want to make it my job. I don't want. And then I got to it and I was like, what else am I good at? And then I did end up going to school, and I have a degree in music composition. So I really studied the art of writing music. And then I moved to LA and I worked for a film composer for about 3 years. And just like totally immersed in the music industry in terms of working on film scores, working, hiring studio musicians, working with directors and producers. And it was like one of the most amazing experiences of my life. You know, college is great, but that hands-on experience is very important, especially in the music business, because there's no school that could teach you how to be in the business. Mm. You can learn music and you can learn business, but you know, being in the entertainment industry is a whole different animal. So that was really, really good for me. And while I was there, I worked in his studio on my own music. And that's where I kind of decided to be like, I think I'm going to pursue this until it works, which was longer than I thought. But yeah, and that's kind of my story. That's kind of what got me here.
So how did, so you do a music composition at college. How do you then graduate and then end up working for somebody? You know, do you have like inroads? Is it a whole networking thing when you're finishing college, you know, to be able to go and just go and get that job, you know, that gives you that experience?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question that actually no one's ever asked me. When I was in my junior year of college, I went to a conference. I actually skipped all my classes for the day and I went to a conference. So the short answer to your question is definitely not. That is not something you just get to go do because you get a college degree. Not even had anything to do with my degree, to be honest.
Right.
So I want like listeners, I don't want listeners to think, oh, I have to go to get a music. No. Mm-mm. Right. I skipped all my classes for the day. There was a conference this guy had flown in from Hollywood, and it kind of was a stars aligned situation where like his mentee was a professor at a neighboring college. And so they must have invited him and flew him in. And so I went to the conference, and the guy was totally everything you would imagine of like a Hollywood film composer. And he was just like kind of nutty and looking crazy and big sunglasses. And but he had a lot of really cool things to say about like writing film music. And he's written major film scores. Like he wrote Runaway Jury, he wrote Swordfish, he wrote Exorcism of Emily Rose, like a lot of big horror film scores. And I just loved like his passion, the way he talked about music. I was like, that's me, that's how I feel. And long story short, everybody went in, like he went into the lobby to like do a meet and greet. And everybody wanted to talk to him. And I just kind of like sit in the corner and waited. And I like watched to make sure he didn't leave. And I just waited and I waited my turn, and I kind of let everybody else go. And then the next speaker started and everybody went back inside and I waited and I kind of pulled him aside and I was like, hey, and I was like, can I buy you a cup of coffee? And he was like, sure. Cause there was like a little coffee cart in the hotel lobby and we ended up sitting and having coffee. And I was like, I want to do what you do. Can I come work for you? Which sounds like really very blunt, but that's really the way it went down. I really just was like, hey, do you have interns? And he was like, yeah. And he ended up giving me his assistant's phone number. And I called her every day for like a week. And she is now one of very good friends of mine. Then we always joke about the story because she's like, oh my God, I couldn't stand, like you were so annoying. But like, that's what it takes. That's really, really important for listeners to understand. Like, no, it didn't have to do with the fact that I had a college degree. I wasn't even finished with college. It wasn't even at the college I was going to. So no, it doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with seizing an opportunity. And that's what I did.
And do you think, because that takes balls and it takes confidence, yeah. So was that something that you naturally had anyway, or did you just think it's now or never sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm, it's funny because it's like confidence is a big thing that I talk about and I like the importance of and all of that. But part of the course that I have for teen girls is because I was very shy. I was very uncomfortable. I was not the cool kid. I was like really good at music, but I kind of stayed in my corner. And so I've always like kind of been shy and uncomfortable, but when it comes to music, the opportunity for it to change my life and let me do something I love always outweighed how like uncomfortable I would be. I actually have said before that I think that was actually a really big blessing in disguise because I always kind of felt out of place. So I was like, they might judge me, but pff, might be happening anyway. So like, who cares? And it never outweighed me going for an opportunity. I was just like, what? I say no, whatever. I might never see this guy again.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just like, what could he say? What's the worst he could do? He could say no. And then I'm still here doing my degree. Like same thing. Yeah.
So literally you had a coffee. He obviously liked you. You then asked about an internship. He gave the number. You then pestered her. You were annoying, but you're now great friends, but it got you where you wanted to get to. So you worked for him for 3 years. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. About on and off. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you move on from there?
I was working for him. I mean, working in Hollywood for an LA film composer is what you think it is. It's chaos. It's every minute you're on the clock. Like there is no schedule. I mean, it's crazy. So it takes a toll for sure. But I was really at a point, I was using his studio. And I was really at a point where he was letting me use the downstairs studio, which is like $1 million studio, but I had all the keys. Wow. He's like, oh yeah, just go use the studio. I'm
like, this is so cool.
Yeah, like sure. And so his assistant at the time, who was kind of my boss, so it was him, and then he had an assistant, and then I was like his assistant's assistant. And he was like 35 or 36 at the time. And I remember thinking, I think I was 20 or 21. And I was like, man, if I'm going to spend the next like 12 or 13 years, like working for somebody on music, it's going to be myself. That's when I got to the point where I was like, I'm really going to pursue my own artistry, my own solo career like that. Mm-hmm. I love writing film music. I still do. It's really, really a fun thing for me. I love to like watch TV and listen to the music.
Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you had this obviously burning desire to do your own thing. And apologies, I know you've done it to where you've got to now, but when you decided you wanted to do that and you started recording your own stuff in a $1 million studio, wow, whoever gets that chance, you know, when right. you're not even in the limelight at that point. So what did it look like next in terms of how you went from that to then becoming, you know, the star that you're clearly growing into and getting bigger and better and all the rest of it? So what did that look like?
Yeah. So I had released a project after that, which was unsuccessful in terms of like numbers. But it was, you know, if you look back, like you never really realize people like Billy Joel and things like that, they have released 7 projects that were a fail or unsuccessful. And then, oh my gosh, The Piano Man.
Yeah.
Things like that happen all the time. And I think that becoming a great artist comes from all of those experiences. They're not a fail, but you have to do them in order to get to the one that does work, which is Erotici for me. Erotici has done, you know, 100 times better than anything I've ever released. So I did a project while I was there. I had released it. I actually got very ill during that time. My music kind of slowed down for a little bit. And then after being sick, I really, really was like, it's now or never. You know, you get to an age like 20, 23, 24, where you're like, you know, I really was in a situation where I was very, like, very, very ill. And I thought, you know, we don't have until this many years or until this, like, it's really numbered. It's really not much control we have over when we stay and when we leave. And that made me really refreshed and go much, much harder towards my music and pursuing this as a career. I was like, after that, I was in a kind of floating where I had released a project and thought, oh, now I'm, you know, now I be famous and people pay me millions of dollars, and it doesn't always work like that. And so I was very discouraged. I was very confused. I was like, man, I worked my ass off on this project and it did nothing. And I spent a lot of money and didn't make the money back. And all those things that we all have gone through as artists. And I was very, very discouraged. And then I got sick. So like music kind of took a backseat for a little bit, never forever. Like music is my heart. So never forever. But after that, being sick is when things really started to take off, where I was like, I'm going to do everything, pursue everything, even though I already kind of had that mentality. Mm. It was bumped up a notch big time.
Yeah. And so in terms of, so you'd done a project that didn't do what you wanted it to do, but how did you, was that self-publishing or had you got a manager and all of that? What did that look like?
I self-published it. That was literally a project that I made while I was there. I mean, if you budgeted out that album, it probably was like $100,000 album, just because I worked in the studio. I mean, I would go to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. I would do my little assistant tasks. And then at 6 o'clock, I would lock the door and I would go downstairs and I would stay there until 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. Most of it was, where does this plug into? What does this go to? I mean, it was a huge studio. There were three different studios. So you had a mic booth, you had a session booth for musicians, you had a booth where they were editing. So I like spent a lot of time learning. It was a huge crash course in learning. It was a huge, because I was like having to teach myself how to engineer. Which now I'll get in the studio and people are like, how do you know how to do that? And I never realized like that would be a benefit later on. I always thought, oh, you know, if that's like something people get out of this, it's like sometimes the lesson or the accomplishment is not what you think it is. The goal was like, let's sell this project. But that wasn't the most beneficial thing to me in that experience. It was learning how to do all of the working parts of making an album.
That's incredible, because I've always thought you've got to have a certain kind of brain and a certain kind of logic to be able to do that. Like, I've got a tiny little I use GarageBand, but I'm not I can't hear it. Do you know what I mean? I can't hear the subtleties and all the rest of it that some people can hear. Right. And so I always think you've got to be a certain kind of person, but you just literally, and maybe you are because you're so musically gifted and from a young age anyway. So maybe it's just a natural thing for you.
Yeah. But the whole part of it, I would say it's natural. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole twiddling of knobs and trying to figure out what goes where, you know, I don't know whether that's natural for you, but you know, when I assumed that you had somebody helping you, but you were just doing that all yourself. That's bonkers.
I was doing it, which is kind of crazy. Like I have a distinct memory of being at like 4 o'clock in the morning and I was so frustrated. I could not get like a mic to work, or I was in the middle of like editing or something. This is way before everybody had a program on their computer, right?
Yeah,
this is
right.
When you had to be in a $1 million studio to learn how to use and a program like that. So I didn't have a clue. And I remember sitting there thinking, I don't have to be here right now. Like, I'm not getting paid to be here. But it was so important to me. And it was so, I always saw this then. Yeah. I always knew like I can build a life for myself doing just what I love, which is music and creating now. And it took me a long time, but that was always the driving force, because I agree with you that I know a lot of people who are musicians and I know a lot of people who are artists. Yeah. And constantly when I'm in an interview, it comes up that like, it's rare for an artist to have such a business mentality, which definitely comes from my dad. Like my dad was the head of the business department at a college. Like he is very business savvy. And from an early age, when I was like 11 or 12, I watched him write his thesis. And I'm like, Dad, we need to send this to the copyright office because someone might steal my song when I'm 11 years old. You know, like, obviously that wasn't, but I always had that mentality to protect the rights and to do all of that. But I think it's a very big mistake if you don't have that mentality, if it's not natural to you, develop it. Because it's, you can do it by yourself, but there's so much information, there's so much knowledge out there available to you for free, but you have to learn, you have to put in the hours, you have to sit up at 4 o'clock at night and say, how do I do this LLC? How do I read this contract? How do I, if you really want to be successful?
Amazing. Okay, so you were ill, that gave you a springboard, or you came back on steroids almost, you know what I mean? You were like, you had it anyway, but that gave you maybe the urgency that you didn't have before. So what did that look like? Was it again another self-creating, self-publishing album? Yeah.
Yep, another one that didn't do, you know, I thought, okay, I'm back, I got it. I was playing some shows here and there, like bar, I started playing gigs and bars and things like that. I think the major thing that no one ever taught me, because I was doing it by myself, is that marketing is everything. Marketing is everything. I always used to feel take it so personally, like nobody likes me and nobody likes my music. And it's like, nobody can find you. There's 5 million people on Apple Music. You know, it's like, the reason you know who Doja Cat and Lizzo and all these, like, they have hundreds of thousands of marketing dollars behind them, and then they're talented. It's not the other way around. Yeah. In the 90s, yeah, it was like that. They find Toni Braxton, she's super cute and talented. They sign her, they throw her in the studio, they put her on stage. That's how it used to work, not anymore. Now you have to stand out, and it takes dollars to do that. It takes budget, you know?
Okay. So the second album wasn't great, but then was it the third?
It was great. It was a great project.
It was great. Yeah, yeah, it was great.
It didn't. So people loved it, but not a lot of people, you know, knew about it. So I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know the importance of that piece.
So are you now going to tell me you're a master marketer, that you went out and learned all of that as well? Yeah.
I ended up going to school during the pandemic a little bit. I didn't finish because things got crazy, but I started pursuing a marketing degree because I was like, I'm missing a piece.
Right.
That was the major piece. And I learned a lot about the psychology, which is like made me love business even more, because there is so much psychology that goes into packaging, words, SEO, verbiage. Like, you can literally change the thumbnail on your YouTube video and it will change the views overnight, because of this psychology that goes with marketing. So I think it's fascinating how that's connected. And it's like, okay, cool. I studied music for X amount of years. I know what I'm doing. I know how to be in the studio. The piece that was missing was marketing. And I did. I have like immersed myself in the pandemic about marketing. And that's the difference.
Right.
My talent didn't change from Erodicy to this last project. Like I did change my style. I did kind of change my sound a little bit. I did take a little more risks. So that was part of it too. But definitely the marketing as well. Yep.
So is there like a defining moment or a pivotal moment that when you look back to that, when you were like, I've done it. This is it. This is the start of it. You know, in terms of, you've obviously equipped yourself with a lot more knowledge in terms of how to get yourself out there.
Yeah.
But what was the first thing that happened that made you think, shit, this is working?
Yeah. Yeah. probably two things. I had a DJ friend text me about Erodicy, and it was like, there's all sorts of things with your music that you need. Like if you release an album or a single, you need to put it on like so many different platforms. You can't just do Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon. Everybody's on there. There's something called the MMD. That's a database just for college radio that nobody really talks about. Nobody really knows about. It's like $50. And your music goes into this queue where college radio stations can find new music. Really important. There's another thing called DJ record pools, where DJs have subscriptions to these record pools and they get all sorts of new music. Lots of people don't know about that. You need to sign up for that. So all of those things are things I didn't know about and didn't learn about until much later. And a DJ friend of mine texts me a picture. He was just like really sifting through the catalog and my song was there. And he's like, I guess this means you made it. And I was like, that's interesting. And then another friend of mine from high school, who's always been very supportive. He called me and he was like, I heard Erodicy on the radio. And he lives in Boston. And that was another defining moment of like, wow, like people are like hearing my song on the radio. Like, it's not because they found it, they played it on their computer, I sent it to them, I begged them to play it. Like, people are playing it on the radio, people are hearing it on the radio. So there's been little wins along the way. You know, another girl posted it as her audio on a TikTok video, and the TikTok video did like 4 million views or something.
Wow.
Crazy. And I thought, oh my God, like, you have this concept of viral and social media. And I'm like, that's not even my video, but 4 million people have heard Erodicy. So those little things throughout the, you know, marketing strategies that we've done, I did a lot of work to get it to radio. I did a lot of work to get it to DJs and different databases besides Spotify, Apple, whatever. Yeah. And that's where I started to be like, oh, all these things that were a fail were collectively for something bigger.
Yeah, totally. So I'm intrigued to know, like, obviously you've put them on different databases. how does then radio just play your thing if you're not with an active agent or manager that's pushing you in the face of everybody? How does that happen? Do they just literally crawl the databases and choose whatever they want to play, or how did that happen?
It's both. I'm actively in the face. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm the manager, I'm the bookkeeper, okay. So yes, it's still actively in their face, but it's me and my assistant that are doing that. And that's really how we did it. We have a list. I have a list of 4,000 DJs, and I'm like, here you go. Call away. Call them again.
Wow.
And literally spending the last 9 months, like, these people are playing Erotici. These people I've talked to and they said they want the MP3. These people are not answering the phone. This radio station is a news station. And just doing that every single week, recycling the, you know, okay, these people are green. We have green leads. We have, you know, like, there's a lot of strategy. There's a lot of, you have to run it like a business. It's got to be like your own record company, your own label. You know, major labels have that. So should you, you know. I only have X amount of hours in the day. So I can't do what a team of 25 people could do for a major artist. But I can get myself to a place where I can get that team myself.
You must have the energy, I don't know, of 50 people, because, like, to what you love is to perform and do your music and write your music and sing and play and all of that. Now, you did say you've got a keen interest in business, and obviously you've started to learn about the marketing and you've got an interest in that. But do you ever get days where you're like, this is draining, this is such hard work?
Yeah, yesterday. I feel like that a lot. But I never for the whole day. It's usually a moment where I'm frustrated, or an hour. It doesn't last, because I love what I do so much. And I do so many things that I'm like, this is really frustrating me, but this looks fun. Let me do this one instead. Right. And just kind of like still working, but shifting my energy to something that will be, you know, productive and valuable. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I do. There, you know, the thing about being an artist, an independent artist, that I think is the reason a lot of people don't do well, or not well, but to the level that they want to, is because they're not willing to do the stuff that's not fun. Calling a radio station when I've called them 3 times. And then Savannah, my assistant, will get an email from out of the blue where she's like, I called this person like in November. And, you know, so it's like, it takes a lot of consistency and a lot of, you have to do the parts that you don't want to do if you want to get to where you're going. And you just have to know, like, this is part of the value of that.
Yeah.
You know,
that is very insightful, because that doesn't just relate to what you're doing. That relates to everything. Any entrepreneur, any business owner, it's the consistency for sure. How did you start to, if we look at the stuff that you're doing with the teenagers and the inspiring stuff, how did that come about, and what drove that?
Yeah, that has to do with feeling, you know, as a teen, I did feel very out of place. I did feel very uncomfortable in my body, and just like didn't feel cool. And I loved music, and music really saved my life on so many occasions, but specifically when I was a teen, I felt it gave me a sense of belonging. I was like the president of the choir in school. I wasn't really bullied, because like people knew I was good at music. And so they were like, oh, be nice to that girl, she might be famous. but that's what made me create that program. I had started coaching during the pandemic because I couldn't gig.
Yeah.
And I was like, what else do I do? And I had a few people reach out to me and be like, will you coach my teen, my daughter? Will you give her singing lessons? And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds fun. I can't do anything else right now. And I was doing it online. And I was like meeting girl after girl, 13, 14, 12, 15. And I was like, these girls are me. They feel they're good singers. Mm. Usually I'm not really teaching them too much. Like they're already come to me pretty kind of knowing some about music. But they're very shy and they feel very uncomfortable. And I think that creating the program started when I had this student named Olivia. I think she's 15 now. She was 12 or 13 when we started. And she was like, I'm very shy and I'm very uncomfortable. And I just don't want to face you when I sing. And she like would turn around when she would sing on her lesson because she just was so uncomfortable. And I thought, oh my God, like that's me. And it made me real. I always felt, you know, up until now, I always felt like, oh, I was the only one who felt that way. And so just seeing girl after girl feeling like that, they love music, but they need that little boost of energy and confidence and self-love. That's what really propelled the program and to be created. And now it's expanded to an adult program and to a preteen program. And yeah, people love it because it's not just about music. Like you can go get music lessons at a music store, you know what I mean? But this is very much holistic approach of, hey, you know, I know from personal experience that being on the stage, learning how to walk, learning how to perform, learning how to project my voice has benefited myself as a woman and as a person, how to feel better about myself in a room, in a conversation. All of that is tied together. And I work hard to tie that for them in the class.
And what does it look like? So are you doing in person? Is there like online videos they've got access to, or what's the program look like?
Right now it's all live and interactive. So I think eventually as my time continues to lessen and lessen, it will turn into like maybe a video automated course that they walk through. But as long as I possibly can, I like to keep it live because I think everybody needs that interaction. Mm-hmm. They need, like, there's something you can't get from a live video, or there's something you can't get from a video where the teacher reacts to how well you did, or the teacher can have a personal conversation with you to say, how did you do? What do you think? What do you think that was like? Like I do something with every single class and every single student called Creates and Celebrates. And I'm like, what do you think you did great? Like, what are you proud of in that? And they'll say, well, and at first, you know, it takes them a while, especially my adult women. They're like, I don't know. And I'm like, that's why we do that. Because a lot of times we don't celebrate ourselves. Even myself, I find out, you know, how people be like, aren't you proud of yourself? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to do that too. But that's really important. And then there's a space for saying, okay, now I don't feel bad about the thing that I did wrong, or I wish I did better. It's just the opposite of that. I did this great, I could work on this. And so that's it. That's a big part of it. You know what I mean? So it's right now it's live. It's every single week. And, you know, the girls will work on a song. Sometimes we'll have a writing activity where they're writing a song. And then just working on performing for each other and celebrating each other and helping each other say, you know, you did this awesome, but maybe you could work on this, and building together. It's very, very cool.
It sounds it.
Yeah.
And I take it that's different to, you mentioned in your bio about teaching people how to make a full-time or a part-time living out of music. So that's something separate, right?
Right. Yeah. That's a separate course that is automated. It is a 7 module, I think 20 something videos. And it's, you just buy the course and you walk through it. And it's just basically everything I learned as a gig musician and how to ask to get paid, how to have strategy when you play a show. So that I think a lot of people are like, oh, I go to open mic and they asked me to play a show and now I have a show. And it's like, yeah, that, you know, that does happen. But if you want to make it a consistent income, there is strategy that goes into it. There is techniques to how do you play at the bar? How do you help the restaurant? How do you benefit them? Like, it has to have a business mindset, you know? Mm. You have to think. I often will tell people, like, a big lesson in the program is, like, there's going to be moments where somebody wants to buy you a drink, but you really need $10 to put in your gas tank. And it's like, if you want to keep booking gigs with that bar, you let that person buy you. You know, like I was saying to somebody the other day, I would always get drinks for free at a bar, at a gig, always free food, free drinks. And I would always let somebody buy me a drink if they asked, or I would, you know, like, and I remember the bartenders being like, you get drinks for free. And I'm like, yeah, but that helps the bar. And that's the way that I would get so many gigs, so many, because I had a business mindset. If they're paying me $500, how can I make them $1,000? And that's why I constantly got hired.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I love that course.
Yeah, definitely. And most people wouldn't think like that at all.
Right. Which is why we have the course.
Amazing. Amazing. What's been the highest moment for you in your varied career up to this point, do you think?
Oh, boy, that's a hard, I don't know if there's one highest moment. I think this year has been a highlight. This whole year has been a major blessing. And I really, up until things started to take off, I was like, I never understood how much value those pieces of the puzzle had. I really felt like, gosh, I just keep failing over and over. It's not working. And I'm sure some of your listeners are like, yes, I know how you feel. Mm. It's not a fail. It's not a fail if it doesn't do what you think it's supposed to. You pursuing it, you continuing, you taking a lesson out of every single thing, that is life. That is what life is about, is how to constantly gather those little in your toolbox of like, oh, I learned this from that. Or how do I do this better? Or that didn't go how I thought, you know, let me figure out why not. And just constant reworking. And that's why it's working for me now. And so that's like my big high moment, is realizing, wow, all those things I did are paying off. They mm-hmm. were for a reason. They were valuable. Everything I learned working at this film studio, everything I learned making a project that didn't do what I wanted it to do. You know, my song You Matter came out 4 years ago. Just now, people like, it's created this whole movement. But I mean, that's 4 years that I thought, oh, you know, why did that take off? That would have been a great thing. It's still taking off. Like, to anybody who's an artist or an entrepreneur or pursuing anything, it's like, don't discredit, you know, everything has a time and place. Everything has a time and place. It could be 10 years. It could be 20 years. You just have to have faith that will turn over, you know? So.
And a bit of a complete change in the question, but, you know, in terms of Hollywood, you know, the stardom and all of that, there is, or there can be for some people, a darker side in terms of, you know, the industry. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on that. Is that something you've experienced, or is that something you're way too savvy to get in, you know, to get stuck in that situation?
I wish. I wish that was the answer. No, that's another big part of why I think that this year has been very successful, is because I have taken more of a realistic approach. I think I went into the music industry feeling like, well, I'm a nice person and I am good at what I do and that will be enough. And that's not true. Especially as a female in the music industry. You know, I wish that wasn't the reality, but I was just saying to Savannah, my assistant, the other day, I was like, the faster we understand that these are the conditions, the better you understand, you know, the faster you learn about who has what, you know, tools and in sports and who has what your the rules are in this, the better you can play the game. And you're not going to rewrite the game because you're nice and you're pretty and you're talented. Like, these are the rules of the game. So unfortunately, I have dealt with quite a bit of that over the last few years in the industry. And a lot of me being like, no, 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 that's not true. And having an experience and being like, well, you know, and making an excuse or, oh, it's not that bad. Or, and then finally getting to a place where I'm like, no, we're not doing that anymore. I'm going to ask the questions that make people uncomfortable. They can, you know, think I'm whatever, but I'm going to push back. I'm going to ask for what I need to. I'm going to ask for contracts. I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to worry about people think I'm not nice or people, you know, whatever. I'm going to do what is best to protect myself. Mm-hmm. And that was a big learning experience for me. But the industry is a hard place. It's a hard place to be, especially as a woman, which is another reason that I have this course for teen girls, because I wish that somebody, a female mentor, had come along and said to me, be aware, be on point. Do not go and do that if they tell you, well, you can have this opportunity if you do X, Y, Z. And it's like, no, it's not worth it. Never. And I never got to a point where I compromised anything that, like, of my integrity or anything, but I was taken advantage of on many, many occasions because I wasn't smart, because I wasn't like, that doesn't seem right. I had that weird feeling, but I still didn't trust that it will just work out some way else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really important.
Thank you for your honesty on that one. I think it's important to bring up because, you know, so much more of that sort of stuff has come to light over the last few years, hasn't it? And continues to. So, and it's like you say, especially for young girls that are aspiring to get into this industry, you've got to be strong in who you are. You've got to know your boundaries. You've got to know that that's not okay. That is not okay.
And not necessary.
And if you're able to get that across to them, bloody brilliant. Absolutely.
I hope so.
Yeah. So for anybody that's not watching the video will go up at some point. But Alora is beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. And I mean, you're 5 hours behind, so it's quite early for you. And I'm like, wow, look at me. It's in the afternoon.
I was like, oh boy.
Okay. So what's next for you in terms of, like, have you got, and I know it will be forever changing, depends on the success of this, the success of that, but is there an ultimate for you in terms of that is what I'm striving for?
Yes and no. I feel like this year, a lot of very exciting, unexpected things have happened for me because I've been more open to following what is presented to me instead of like, it has to be like this. It's supposed to be like this. That wasn't working for me. So as things have come up for me over this year, I've kind of pivoted here and here. And we're about to launch a new show that will be available on Roku TV. It'll be on a network called The Honest Network. So you can download the app. And then there's a show for that. That's my show on the app, which is totally like random. It got presented to me. And I was like, yeah, I love it. I would love to do it. So little things like that, I think are pivots, right? Like, it's hard for me to say, yes, I want to see. The short answer is I want to see everything that I'm doing on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
So I want to see the courses continue to do well and grow and grow and grow. I would love to do conferences for women and love to do conferences for like moms and teens. That's definitely future focused. You Matter Movement, I go and visit schools and communities and I run programs. And we did 2 schools this year and we're lined up to do 6 schools in the fall. I would love to see that go international. We're working on workbook for that so that people, you know, like I'm realizing like, oh, I'm limited in where I could be. And, you know, yeah. So how many resources can I create so we can get these messages and these activities out? Music, definitely an album by the end of the year. That's what we're working on right now. So I'm hoping to put that out sometime in the fall. And then, everything with the courses, let the courses grow. I'm still writing for different publications. Now the show is kind of like my writing outlet because I'm writing everything and producing for the show. I'm just kind of following what the universe is like, hey, do this. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Sure.
Brilliant. So if anyone listening wants to find out more about you or go listen to your music or go see these courses, where's the best place for them to go?
They can go to lovelightsoundmusic.com, and that's my company's website. Erodicy came out in September. Like you said, it's doing very, very well. But we're definitely still pushing it for summer until we come with new music. So that's on lovelightsoundmusic.com. So is all, we have 3 courses. So Unseen to Queen, we have another course we didn't chat too much about. It's called The Willing Creative, where we meet. It's a collective of like just creative people. You don't have to be a musician. It's for artists and creatives and writers and all of that. And that's like a group. I'm very big on live interaction because I think that's important. And then the Make Music, Make Money is the one that is automated. You can get that there. And then like for schools who want to book me for speaking or You Matter, that's on the website too. So everything's at lovelightsoundmusic.com. If they're like, what are all these things? Like just go there. Find out, click on all the things and see what's up there.
And I should have said this at the beginning, but I'll do it when I do the intro for the podcast. What is your genre of music, if there is a genre?
Yeah, it's R&B soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like pop R&B soul type music. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, it's been a genuinely pleasure to meet you. And just your ambition, enthusiasm, your intelligence, your persona is everything that any parent, you know, in terms of their kids, their teenage daughters, whatever, would welcome in terms of a mentor. And the fact that you've got that spirit within the industry and you're now protecting yourself more, which is great, can only go one way, you know, and that's up, right? And like you said, if you let go of the control and you allow the universe to maybe steer you for something bigger and better than you can't even think of right now, then that's what it's all about. So it's been an absolute pleasure. I like to finish these conversations with anything you feel called to share, just to finish off the conversation.
I think that one of the biggest like messages that I hope that people, because you know, you start to see people when they're successful and it's like, oh, but they're, you know, they did this and they're doing this. And it's like, you just can't quit. It will happen. You have to be willing to follow. You have to be willing to adapt. You have to be willing to be flexible. It might not always go the way you think it is. You know, it might not be exactly, you have to be willing to adapt and find out, what do you really love? Like, I've realized over the last few years, I love to create, but that is so much bigger than music. I'm good at music, but I love to write. I love to cook. I love to, you know what I mean? I like to do things that are creative, and it's opened so many doors for me. It's opened so many new opportunities. So just be open and be willing to, you know, pursue the things that come to you, because maybe that's your path. Maybe that's your gift, you know? Absolutely. I know I had a very close, you know, like, no, I have to do this and I have to do. And it's like, I think that stopped me from a lot of things. And now being open-minded and open to what's happening is, you know, you have to be open. You can't give up. That's it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you again. As I say, it's been an absolute pleasure. I know the listeners will get a lot of value out of this, and I'm going to go and check out your music as well. So I did listen, like, because we were supposed to do this a few months ago.
Yeah, I know.
but I haven't had a chance to revisit it. So yeah, I'm going to do that. But thank you so much for your time today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed that conversation or were inspired in any way, please, please leave me a review on iTunes. It's the best way for other people to find my podcast and be inspired themselves. Well, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, and perhaps the story resonated with your own life or reminded you that perhaps you're also settling for second best. I've been helping people from a young age and realising that there is more to life than what they are currently settling for. My desire is to give others the love to confidently and respectfully know their value so that they feel joy and are empowered to make a fulfilling difference. If that sounds good to you and you'd like to reach out and connect, you can find me at facebook.com/Mel Clark Coaching. That's Clark with an E. Or instagram.com/Mel Clark Coaching. Enjoy your day.